Okay, our first speaker is Richard Vedder. Professor Vedder is a senior fellow here at the Independent Institute. He's actually authored two books here, among other things. He's a distinguished professor of economics at Ohio University. He's the co-author of the book Out of Work I mentioned, which is in a second edition. And most recently, his book is called The Walmart Revolution, which is on tonight's topic. The subtitle of that is How Big Box Stores Benefit Consumers, Workers, and the Economy. I'm delighted to introduce Richard Vedder.
Thank you very much, David. I'm delighted to be here. I, as David mentioned, I have an association with this fine institute that goes back, I think, to its beginning in one form or other, which now must be 20-some years. It's hard to believe. And I am delighted to be here. As David indicated, attacks on big corporations and are commonplace. He didn't get into this in detail, but in his introduction he alluded to something that is worth pointing out. I'm an economic historian. I have to mention that the attacks on Walmart today are the continuation in many ways of attacks on large corporate entities that have been going on in various ways for a long, long time. It was almost exactly 100 years ago today, for example, that Ida Tarbell wrote a book about the Standard Oil Company that became and was viciously attacked at the time. And then later on we're told that General Motors in the 1960s were producing inferior cars. Remember the Corvair and Ralph Nader? And we learn that oil companies are hurting us and causing all sorts of problems in our lives, tobacco companies, and so forth. So we the criticism of large corporations is not new in America, and I would say that historically, in many cases, they tend to be overblown. Although not all, some of the criticisms may be justified. Standard Oil gave us cheap kerosene and gasoline. Research has subsequently shown that the Corvair was not particularly unsafe. But today let's talk about Walmart. We are told by the critics of Walmart that Walmart, let me mention six criticisms. Walmart costs jobs. It costs jobs in many ways. It costs jobs locally when it comes to town and workers lose jobs at competitive firms. Competing firms. It costs jobs because globalization leads to a decline in manufacturing jobs in the U.S., and Walmart is a large importer of goods. Secondly, we're told that Walmart pays substandard wages, that its wages are lower than they need to be, lower than they should be, lower than what is appropriate. Thirdly, we're told that Walmart does not provide health insurance for its workers and that this is a shameful condition that needs to be rectified. We are also told that Walmart destroys local businesses and downtown areas and often sort of wreaks havoc with the fabric of local communities in a variety of different ways. We are told, fifthly, that Walmart is a burden on governments. We see this because a lot of Walmart workers are on Medicaid, we're told. That Walmart receives subsidies sometimes when it comes into communities in the form of tax credits and breaks. That it adds to the burden on taxpayers. Six, we're told that Walmart hurts the environment. That there are environmental problems of a variety of sorts with Walmart. And there are other minor or lesser criticisms I won't go into tonight. We only have 20 minutes. My favorite came, I was a law professor at of course, the University of California, where else, who argued very passionately recently that Walmart hurts women's health, that it is a detriment to women's health. And it took me a long time to figure out what the reasoning was there. The reasoning, by the way, is that when you go into a Walmart store, you don't have to walk as much as before. Before we had Walmart, and women aren't walking as much as before, and they need to walk more, and therefore their health is impaired. Although I think the woman who made this claim had never been in a Walmart store, because every time I go in them, there's a lot of walking, I think. But anyway, so there are a lot of criticisms of Walmart. Let me talk about them for a few minutes. And then let me talk about what I think are some of the positive attributes of the company. First of all, does Walmart cost jobs? It is no doubt true that there are some workers who had jobs before Walmart came to town who lose their jobs when Walmart comes to town. They work for the local competitive little small store that goes out of business. They lose their job. It is no doubt true that there are some people that have worked in U.S. manufacturing plants that are no longer working in U.S. manufacturing plants because jobs are being created in China, or the products are being outsourced to foreign companies. And in some cases, Walmart are buying those goods. But it is also true that Walmart creates a lot of jobs. That Walmart brings in job. First of all, every new Walmart store employs you typically 300-350 workers right by itself. This is exclusive of any other synergies or other stores that may open up at the same time when Walmart opens up in the community. Research that I have done, I've looked at Walmarts that opened, and I looked at employment in communities the year before Walmart opened. I looked at employment in the communities the year after they open. I've tried to correct for regional effects and other effects that might impact on this, and looked at employment, and I found that in a majority of cases, there are more jobs in the community after Walmart comes to town than before. That finding has been is very consistent with the finding of several other scholars, that on balance, Walmart is probably a job creator. It's interesting that in the era of the Walmart domination of retail in the 1990s and 2000s, the average unemployment rate in the United States is lower, not higher, than it was in, say, the 1970s, before Walmart became a significant force in our life. The data simply do not support the hypothesis that Walmart is a net a destroyer of jobs. Simply does not support that, in my judgment. I could go into some arguments relating to globalization as it relates to this, but it's true as international trade has expanded, job creation has expanded as well. Unemployment rates in the last decade or 15 years, for example, are on average lower than they were in the 1970s when the international trade sector was much smaller. Walmart, by the way, although it is a big importer of goods, is hardly unique in the big box industry in importing goods from China and other places. I defy you to go into a Best Buy electronics store and try to buy an American-made good of any kind in one of those stores. Second, with regards to wages, Walmart, you don't get rich working at Walmart. A typical Walmart worker, and they report the average wage is between $10 and $11 an hour. Varies a little bit from state to state. There's some regional variation. My guess is in California it's a tad higher than that because your wage levels tend to be a little higher than average. I would guess in this day it's around $11 an hour. And there are a lot of workers that make $8 or $9 an hour. There are others that make $15. But these wages are not out of line with industry standards. The average pay in retail trade is low. Workers tend to be relatively inexperienced. They tend to have relatively low levels of skill on average, and this is very typical for an industry of this kind. Walmart, by the way, has one fringe benefit or one attribute that's a little unusual in the industry. It does have a large number of its employees that own common stock in the company, which makes it somewhat different than some of the others. And there seems to be some high level of loyalty to the company. on average, even though obviously there are some exceptions. David mentioned, for example, the turnover rates of Walmart employees are really not out of line with industry standards, and that's, as best I can tell, is the case. By the way, I'm somewhat hampered in talking about this because Walmart itself has been inexplicably didn't provide me a lot of information that I asked, even though I was saying nice things about the company. And by the way, I don't own a single share of Walmart stock. I've never had much association with the company at all, other than shopping there a few times, and that's it. I never met a major Walmart executive till 2 weeks ago when I asked him to sell copies of my book, and they refused to in their stores, which is one of the worst business decisions they ever made. What about health benefits? This is what's getting a lot of the attacks from the labor unions have been, and it is the unions that are leading this attack on Walmart. Make no mistake about it. There are other groups too, but it is the unions that are leading the way more than anyone else. Health benefits in the industry tend to be relatively low in retail trade. Walmart has 50%, never lower than 40% of the workers receive health insurance through Walmart. That's not atypical of that industry. If you ask how many workers at Walmart have no health insurance at all, the numbers I see, I've never seen a number higher than 10%. And most, it's usually somewhat lower. Many, many workers are on their spouse's health care plan, their parents' health care plan, or their senior citizens like myself, who are those blue-suited guys at the door, some of whom are senior citizens who are on Medicare already. Many of them, most people, have some sort of a benefit. Now, it's to be sure, Walmart's health care policy, they expect you to pay some of the premium yourself. The benefits are not opulent in the sense of being a Cadillac policy, but this, as I say, is not out of line with industry practices. What about local businesses? We hear that local businesses sometimes are destroyed. Walmart comes to town and the downtown closes down in small communities. Well, that sometimes does happen, and there are stores that go out of business when Walmart comes in. But I might add, they go out of business not only because Walmart comes in, but because consumers shop at them. So if you want to blame someone, blame the consumers. Maybe we ought to tax the consumers who are doing this dastardly thing. They're going to Walmart and shop. That's what puts these businesses out of business. It's not. It's because Walmart is offering a superior product, more choices, lower prices, good parking, etc., giving people what they want. And by the way, the destructions of downtown started long before Walmart came along. I remember in the 1950s and 60s, as shopping centers came in on the outskirts of town. People said, there goes the downtown. And that argument has been repeated in one form or other since then. Joseph Schumpeter, the great Austrian economist, speaks of creative destruction, that we are constantly changing. As our tastes change, as technologies change, we find new ways of doing things. And indeed, I think Walmart in some ways has peaked, as new forms of technology are coming along to supplant it. Internet shopping, for example. We are told that Walmart is a burden on taxpayers. Now, it is true that Walmart occasionally gets subsidies when they move into communities from communities who want to lure Walmart in. I tend to agree with the critics that this is not a very smart idea to give corporate welfare out. But I don't know why Walmart should be singled out any more than any other corporation. But it's also true that Walmart pays billions in taxes each year. Indeed, I don't have the exact figure at Walmart, but I would guess since they pay sales taxes in virtually 45 of our 50 states in this union, and it's making certain assumptions, it's almost for certain that Walmart pays far more in taxes than it makes in after-tax profits. Their taxes are higher than their profits. And to argue that Walmart is a serious burden on taxpayers, I think strains could it's just simply hard to fathom. Even with some workers receiving Medicaid benefits, which is true, but is also, I might true, may say is true at other stores like Target or Best Buy and so forth. What about Walmart and the environment? Well, this is a big argument, and we have little time. Walmart actually is getting some kudos lately from some for its sort of pro-environmental actions. I read in today's newspaper, for example, it is trying to use solar power in this state more in a much larger fashion than previously. It's putting pressure on its suppliers to do environmentally friendly things. But one of the arguments is that it brings congestions to communities. It builds unsightly stores. But usually Walmart goes into some pretty grubby areas of town where the stores that are already there are not architectural wonders. And one person's eye sore may be another person's Taj Mahal. So I find this argument a hard one to evaluate. My time is, I think, down to 4 minutes or something. By the way, I didn't see that. Five. My eyes are bad. So you'll have to help me here. So let me turn now to the positives on Walmart. What is it that Walmart has done of a positive nature for American society? The one thing that gets very little attention that I want to mention first and then talk about the things that David mentioned in his introduction. It is almost certain that Walmart has enormously increased productivity in retail trade. Workers in retail trade do a lot of much more. They sell a lot more goods. They get more goods to the consumers today than they did a decade or two ago. Between 1987 and 2004, labor productivity in the Walmart part of the retail trade industry rose nearly 8% a year, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. This is far greater than the productivity advance in the rest of the economy and is extraordinarily unusual for retail trade. This means that workers are turning out more goods per hour. And this leads to rising standards of living, rising wages, rising prosperity for Americans, not only employees of Walmart, but Americans as a whole. This, in my calculation, under the most conservative of assumptions, has raised our national output by tens of billions of dollars annually, and one could make an argument that it comes closer to being hundreds of billions of dollars annually. I won't put a specific figure on it, but to say that it's substantial. The second thing Walmart does of a positive nature, it creates what us economists call consumer surplus. It means that people are able to get things that they would buy anyway for less money. You're willing to pay $12 to buy a widget. You're able to buy one at the old-style store for $10. You're getting it for $2 less than you're willing to pay. Walmart comes along, and now it's only $9 instead of $10. You're now getting it for $3 less than you were willing to pay. You got a dollar, one more dollar in your pocket. And that's welfare to you. That's happiness for you. That's material happiness. A dollar here, a dollar there, it all adds up. Walmart's annual sales worldwide are over $350 billion a year, roughly $1 billion a day. Walmart sells $1 billion of goods a day, and if people save 5 or 10% on those goods from what they otherwise would, that may mean as much as $100 million a day in savings for people. Now, who are these people? Who shops at Walmart? Well, Walmart appeals to everyone of every income class, but the evidence is quite clear that it especially appeals to people with low and middle incomes. But a very substantial proportion of Walmart shoppers are poor. Poor people like Walmart. Poor people shop in Walmart and spend a disproportionate percentage of their income there. When you do away with Walmart and you attack Walmart, you're attacking poor people. It is the equivalent of imposing a regressive tax on people. It's exactly the same, in my opinion. Lastly, Walmart creates jobs. There are more people working in America than ever before, and I don't want to say that Walmart gets all the credit or even most of the credit for this, but to argue that Walmart is a destroyer of jobs is simply inconsistent with the factual evidence. Walmart has been a great innovator. It has been a great and it has improved the lot of many and many Americans, both by providing jobs and by providing greater standard of living through lower prices. It has been the ultimate American success story of the last century. Sam Walton had a vision. Sam Walton was fanatic in wanting to get this vision fulfilled. And he worked hard. He believed in everyday prices. He believed in meeting the needs of consumers. And he did. And he did it well. He cut costs relentlessly. He shared rooms with his senior executives when he stayed in hotels, much to their chagrin. He did everything he could to cut costs. But he did it to help himself, to make more money, to be wealthier. But he helped society as well. As a final footnote, I would mention that Sam's widow, Helen, died last week. She is leaving almost her entire estate of close to $18 billion is going to the Walton Foundation to serve humankind. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. Our second speaker is Ken Jacob. Ken is the chair of the Labor Center at the University of California at Berkeley. He's also a former member of the Mayor's Universal Healthcare Council in San Francisco, for the city of San Francisco. He's co-author of a number of studies that are related to our discussion tonight, including declining job-based health coverage for working families in California and the United States, and hidden costs of Walmart jobs. Ken?
Thank you, David, and thank you for having me here tonight, and thanks, everybody, for coming out and missing American Idol and the Giants-Mets game. I don't know, but get your priorities straight, guys. So I'd like to follow this up by reviewing the research on a number of the questions that Richard talked about to really help us understand how we should think about Walmart and, more importantly, what, if any, action can or should be taken. Does Walmart have lower wages and benefits compared to other retailers? Do they reduce wages and benefits when they move into a community? Should we care? Do they reduce prices when they move into a community? Is shifting health costs a bad thing? And even if we do care, what can we actually do about any of this? Before I go into detail on wages and benefits, I want to start with some points on which I believe Richard and I do agree. Walmart really has revolutionized retail in the United States. Their everyday low price model has driven down prices. The biggest contribution is the transformation of the logistics supply chain. Their use of technology, Retail Link, RFID chips has enabled them to move goods and ship them in a much more efficient way ever in the history of humanity, and other businesses are just catching up. Their logistics sector, in terms of the use of cross-docking and just-in-time inventory, allow them to make changes in stores at a moment's notice. And all of this, as Richard noted, has led to major increases in productivity. They also, given their size and scope, are able to exercise significant control over sourcing and suppliers, and in doing so, have really reversed the equation in retail in America. The historical equation in the world, the historical equation was producers produce what they're going to produce, and retailers then sell. They're the second level down. What Walmart's done is flip that around. Walmart really controls what is being produced, how much it's being produced for, and has used its tremendous power in a sense. The argument they make is, you know, they're a consumer union. They use their power to bargain prices down for consumers, much like the Democrats would like to do with Medicaid drugs. On the flip side, part of that has meant that they are also, in part of that bargaining with producers, is pushing offshoring. They've told corporate businesses, if you want to continue to produce for us, you got to go offshore. You got to get those prices down. You can't produce in the United States. So that costs jobs in the U.S. It also lowers prices. You know, one has to look at how do we think about this. So there's no question that in doing this, Walmart has brought retail prices down, and I'll get into the evidence on that in a minute. But first, I want to start and talk about the evidence on Walmart's wages and benefits. I know Richard gave some generalities, but it's really worth looking at some of the specifics. If we do a straight wage comparison between Walmart and other retailers, you find about a 26% wage gap between them and large retail. That's retailers of 1,000 or more. The straight comparison in California is 30%. As Richard notes in his book, however, if we compare wages between Walmart and other retailers, we have to take into account geographic distribution of the workforce, right? Walmart's more in rural areas, less in cities. Wages are lower there. So using the March 2005 current population survey and data from Walmart, we compared hourly retail workers in Walmart and did those adjustments for location differences. And we found a sizable wage gap between the earnings of Walmart workers and retail workers overall. That's general retail workers, about 12.4%. The gap when looking at large retail goes up to 14.5%, grocery 17.5%, and large general merchandise. So that's their other direct competitors in general merchandise, 25.6%. So Walmart, the evidence is very clear. Walmart does pay less than other retailers. We find similar differences if we look at health benefits. As Richard notes in his book, Walmart provides about 43, some say 46% of its workforce with health benefits. That compares to about 53% for large retailers as a whole. But the difference is much starker when we look at the quality of those health benefits. Walmart spends about 27% less on health benefits than do large retailers as a whole. And if you to understand what that actually means in terms of the quality of benefits, an internal Walmart memo, Susan Chambers noted that most of their associates, as they call them, would have to be bankrupt before they met the deductibles on their health plans. So in looking at in terms of the health benefits, despite the general talk that Walmart workers have coverage elsewhere, the data is also clear that children of Walmart workers are much more likely to be uninsured than children of large retailers as a group, 27% compared to 22%, and significantly more likely to rely on Medicaid or SCHIP for health care, the healthy children's health care programs. About 19% of children of Walmart workers are on public programs compared to about 7.5% for retailers as a whole. So there actually are some significant differences here. But this points to one of the public costs of Walmart's low wages and benefits. As we know, when workers don't earn enough to survive and support their families through their job, they rely on public assistance programs to make ends meet. That's what public assistance programs are for. It's good that they're there. But what that means is if firms are using those programs to function as subsidies, as appears to be the case in Walmart, that can put competitive pressure on other firms to do the same, which overwhelms the public sector. In 2001, we found that California Walmart workers and their children received about $32 million in health-related public assistance and $54 million in non-health-related programs like food stamps, $86 million a year. Their workforce has nearly doubled since that time, so those numbers most assuredly have gone up. And I know Richard did note that, well, they're collecting a lot of tax money, but as we'll get into in a minute, Walmart isn't increasing the amount of retail sales in America. They're just changing who collects those taxes. So to argue that their retail sales off-balance it is simply not true. But the impact of low rates of health benefits go beyond direct public assistance, as the governor has been pointing out repeatedly recently. When people don't have health care on the job and they get health care, end up relying on hospitals getting uncompensated care, that ends up in all of your health premiums. But if Walmart was creating new jobs and employing people who would not otherwise be employed, none of this would be an issue, right? So it's important to look at, as Richard noted, what's the net effect of Walmart's expansion on employment, on wages, and on benefits. So I want to look at that research now. And here's a point I want to agree with, Richard. The preponderance of evidence around Walmart and retail job creation, this is leaving aside the question of offshoring, is that Walmart has no effect on total jobs. There's a few studies that have found a small positive effect, a mound of studies that have found a small negative effect. Turn it every which way but sideways. In general, the safe conclusion is after Walmart comes in, the number of retail jobs is the same as it was beforehand. It's just different jobs. In fact, retail employment in the United States has been incredibly stable for the last 20 years. Walmart doesn't create new jobs. It replaces existing jobs. But here's when we look at this research, there's some areas that actually become very difficult. And I know I looked at what some of the stuff Richard did, you know, take a few cities, what's the employment before or after. But really, Walmart doesn't make its decisions on location in a vacuum. They look where are places growing, what are current wages. So you really need to put in some controls if you want to understand what the impact is and not just be getting what economists call selection bias. So my colleague Aaron Drajit Dubé did a study to look at what's Walmart's impact on healthcare and on wages in retail as it expands. One of the nice things about Walmart's expansion, and this is a beautiful part of their logistics model, is they've expanded out pretty concentrically from Bentonville because they move their distribution center, go around it, move out. So you've got a nice pattern. So he was able to use, as they call it, instrumental variable, distance and time and distance from Bentonville, to look at, it's like a drop of water going in a pool, to look at sort of what's the effect of Walmart as it's expanded on in counties and states on wages. So what he found was Walmart reduces wages in general merchandise, not a surprise. They're going in, replacing those jobs. Walmart's expansion reduces wages in grocery industry. That shows it has a competitive effect. And Walmart's expansion does not reduce wages in non-competitive retail. That shows that the study is actually picking up something real. He also found a decline in benefits. What's it all add up to? Average per state, we're talking about a 5% decline in health coverage in retail overall, and about a 10% decline in retail earnings, which total lost earnings due to Walmart in the range of about close to $5 billion a year. So these are real results. And the sharpest example of this can be seen in what happened in Southern California following the grocery strike and lockout 3.5 years ago, where the grocery companies said in order to compete with Walmart, they needed to reduce their health benefits and ended up in a 3-year period cutting the share of workers with health benefits in Southern California from 94% to 54%. We can argue about how much that really was Walmart or they were using it, but it is a significant impact, and it was Walmart's expansion that precipitated that event. All right, so the evidence strongly suggests Walmart lowers wages and benefits. But what about consumer savings? Richard makes the point. You got some welfare benefits on the other side, right? Lots of consumers are saving money. This is actually really hard to figure out. I know in his book, Richard does a bunch of hand-waving to try to come up with some numbers, and I don't blame him because it's difficult. It's hard to use the consumer price index to do this because, according to the consumer price index, there can be theoretically no impact. If goods are cheaper, either are selling for less, it has to be either because they're lower quality or because there's some part of the people are paying difference to get different shopping experiences. So into the theoretical model is an inability to show any kind of change. This makes it hard to study. There's been some very good work done by people like Hausman and Liebtag, really looking at identical grocery products, where this is the easiest to do. And the various grocery studies show, depending on the good, some 7 to 26% difference at Walmart. That's not small. And estimates of competitors dropping prices to meet Walmart, usually around 1%. One study found as much as 3%. So there's no question. The question in terms, and groceries where you'd expect to find the most, because Walmart really uses that to bring people into the store to buy other goods. So you'd be surprised if you found similar margins in other areas. So it's clear Walmart saves consumer money. So we've got this issue. They're driving down wages and benefits. That's clearly hurting workers. They're saving consumers money. That's clearly helping people. So then the question comes back to us. which is the point that Richard made. How does this work out in terms of who they're helping and who they're hurting? So we looked at in Chicago, people may be familiar, city council passed by a 2/3 vote a big box living wage ordinance, which required Walmart to pay $10 an hour minimum. Vetoed by the mayor, the mayor's supporters just lost the last election, it'll probably come back pretty soon. So we looked and said, okay, what would happen if Walmart had to pay $10 an hour nationally? We estimated it would require a wage increase of 16%, about $4 billion a year, bringing them in line with large retailers as a whole, if still significantly behind union grocers. The cost of such a wage increase, of course, could be absorbed in a number of ways. Lower profits, reduced management salaries and bonuses, efficiency wage gains through higher productivity, less absenteeism, or it could be passed on to consumers. So let's assume it's all passed on to consumers. Doubtful, but let's assume that. With $266 billion in sales in the U.S., a $4 billion wage increase could be passed through with a 1.5% increase in profits. According to A.C. Nielsen, the average customer spends $40 on a sale. So 1.5% cost increase is 62 cents. The average customer takes a little less than 28 shopping trips a year. So we're talking about a $17 per customer. Okay. So how would that fall on low-income shoppers compared to the gains from low-income workers, if we want to think of Walmart as being an anti-poverty program? Well, A.C. Nielsen divides Walmart shoppers into 12 even groups. The top two tiers account for 54% of sales. What's interesting is that while 21% of Walmart shoppers are in families below 200% of the federal poverty line, only 9% of their top shoppers are. Well, this isn't a surprise. People with more money spend more money. People with less money spend less money. So what that means is you have less than 20% of the sales going to low-income households, while more than half of the wage increases would go to low-income households in this model. So basically what we can see from this is that one can imagine the kinds of policies that would get the efficiency gains from Walmart, allow them to compete in the market, and yet still have greater benefits for workers without dramatically reducing the benefit for consumers. The impact on consumers would be spread broadly. The impact on low-income workers would be quite significant. That is what the laws proposed in Chicago and D.C. look to do. Those are smart policies. There's a few other criticisms of Walmart I think it's important to mention quickly, and then I'll wrap up. One is, as we look at Walmart and how we should think about them, you know, one of the points that Richard made in his book is this question of why treat Walmart differently than other companies. And actually, this is an area where, in general, we agree. I think that given if Walmart didn't exist, it would come into being by somebody else, and there are other ones waiting in the wings. The question to me is, in this new world, what are the kinds of policies that should be put into place in order to level the playing field overall? There's also the issue that when a company like Walmart does violate the law, which they do repeatedly, of course, they should be punished. And I, you know, just want to mention a few examples. Walmart's anti-labor practices go way beyond standard competitive measures. The company's violations have included hiring janitorial contractors that pay sub-minimum wages, mostly illegal immigrants, locking workers into the store overnight in violation of health and safety regulations, charges of using child labor, meal break violations, and of course now they're now facing the largest sex discrimination suit in U.S. history. Of course, Richard points out correctly that as the largest employer in U.S. history, it's going to be the largest suit in U.S. history. Human Rights Watch just released a 210-page report that found that Walmart stood out for its aggressive anti-union tactics, some legal, some illegal. I quote, "Walmart's relentless anti-union drumbeat creates a climate of fear in its stores. Walmart has sent managers to eavesdrop on employees. According to former workers and managers at one store, it even ordered the repositioning of surveillance cameras to monitor union supporters. There's been other issues of Walmart actually surveilling shareholders of the company in order to figure out who was giving out leaks." I would think that libertarians would be especially concerned with the company's aggressive stance towards cities and seeking economic development studies. While Walmart doesn't increase total sales tax generation in a region, it can have a real impact on which jurisdiction receives that sales tax. So by invoking threats to open up in a specific jurisdiction, they've secured more than $1 billion in taxpayer subsidies over the last decade. And I suspect many people in this audience would be a little uneasy with their aggressive efforts to push local jurisdictions to use eminent domain to gain land for them to build on. Finally, many Walmart opponents don't look at economic issues at all, but are more concerned with the impacts on traffic, the destruction of small town centers, community spaces. And Richard's surely right on this point that Walmart must be located within a larger trend, but there's no question that the company has been a large part of that trend. And town residents have the right to make zoning rules that govern what kind of community they wish to live in. Which brings us to the important question of choice. Richard argued that banning big box threatens consumer choice. After all, people don't have to shop at Walmart. It's a question of what consumers choose to do. The problem here is it only takes a minority of switchers to Walmart to undermine the economic viability of smaller competitors. When grocery stores and small businesses lose even 20% of their customer base, this may push them over edge. So the end result is less consumer choice, not more. More people who want to have that choice are left out of it because the one thing left standing is Walmart. So in the end, some communities will decide they want big box retail. In fact, I have to say, in our research, you don't find any of the negative wage and benefit effects in rural areas. It's not surprising. The jobs they're killing didn't pay much to start. You do find substantial wage and benefit effects in urban areas. Some communities will decide different on this. Other communities will decide if they accept big box retailers if they meet certain community standards. Others will decide to keep them out altogether. And that's the beauty of democracy in America. Thanks.